Audio.
Attention, everybody. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of Axe Ministry, Axe Media Group, and or their affiliate and supported ministries and or nonprofits. So he's here today. He's going to talk about something that I think we're all interested in, Crime Time, with your host, Dr. Steve Albrecht. Take it away, Steve.
Thanks, Producer Matt, Producer Jay. Welcome to Crime Time, and this is Crime Time Podcast Episode 63. I'm Dr. Steve Albrecht, joining you from the Axe Media Group Studios for my last and final time here at these Axe Media Group Studios before we move to our new plush location in Springfield, Missouri. For this hour, I'll be talking about an article that I wrote back in the 90s called If I Were a Crook. This is all the things that I would do to be a successful criminal. Some of these things are based on social engineering, some on timing, and some on the fact that people expect criminals to look and act a certain way. If you are a crook and you dress the part and you carry an object, which we're going to talk about in some detail, that's not a gun, you'll be able to get away with a lot of stuff. So thanks for listening to Crime Time, where we talk about crime and crooks and cops and personal security, your personal security. We'll talk about some dangerous people and lots of heroes, and we'll even mention a few stupid crooks. That's my favorite part of the show, stupid crooks. Most importantly, I'll talk about what you can do to keep yourself and your family safe from crime and violence. And as always, you need to be vigilant at home and in your neighborhood and in your community and at school and at work and even on the road. Yesterday, I did an interview with a Winnipeg news reporter about two road rage cases that happened in Canada. Yet again, road rage is continuing to be an issue in this country and in theirs as well. One of these days, we'll do a road rage conversation. This show exists to make you feel more empowered, more secure, and more educated on security issues and on the criminal justice system. As background, I worked for the San Diego Police Department in San Diego, California for 15 years as a patrol officer, a reserve sergeant, and a domestic violence investigator. I now work as a training consultant, and I teach training workshops, webinars, and live programs, if we ever go back to those, focusing on human resources, employee coaching, workplace violence prevention, school violence, library security, and security issues in the workplace. I've written 24 books on business, workplace violence, police subjects, and guns, all of which you can find on Amazon. My three gun books are available on Amazon Kindle. You can always reach me at my website at crimetimeradio.com. You can send me an email, connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm at Dr. Steve Albrecht on Twitter and LinkedIn. And you can follow me on Twitter if you like. You can always find past episodes of the show on my SoundCloud website, and the new ones are always posted at this time on YouTube. So let's talk about this idea, if I were a crook. Back in the, I think it was the 90s, I wrote a piece for Police Magazine. Police Magazine is probably one of the only police publications that's still in print. There's Police One and a couple others, but a lot of others have gone out of business. But Police Magazine has been around since the, I don't know, 70s, I think. I wrote my first piece for them, I think, in 84, 85. So I wrote a piece back in the 90s called If I Were a Crook. And what it looked at was what were the things that, as a cop, I see in crooks that make it easier for them to do their job. And for some of them, it is a professional occupation. The idea that, you know, a guy just sort of stumbles into crime and goes that way to support a drug habit. Yeah, there's those people there. But there are some that are really good at being criminals. And occasionally they get caught and they go to prison and things like that. But they're quite good at being a criminal. And so what I thought about is, what are some of the ways that they can use social engineering? They use coincidence. They use timing. They use the appearance of what does not look like a bad guy. And I tell this to, you know, when I was teaching cops and writing books and things and training them, that not to pay attention to just always dirtbag-looking people driving dirtbag-looking cars, but look at guys that drive nice cars and people in parts of town where you say, this guy looks like he's a criminal, even though he's in a really good part of town and he doesn't appear to be doing anything, but my spider sense is going off because something's wrong about this situation. So we have a tendency as human beings to have, you know, kind of a response bias where we look at people and value judge them, what they're driving, what they're wearing, what they look like. And so good crooks use this to their advantage. And also they have a sense, some of these guys, that people aren't paying attention to what's really happening in front of them, and they sometimes miss obvious signs. And then also, some of these guys are really good scammers. They're really good at conversations and appearance and how they do things, which later on you figure out that you got ripped off and you thought this guy was a legitimate business person or salesman or whatever it happens to be. So a couple of these guys are sort of archetypes for me. There was a guy, I worked at a clothing store in California in San Diego when I was in college, and they brought in a guy who was a career thief, and his whole in and out of prison time, in between prison stints, he would be a security consultant. I know it's sort of ironic, where he would show retail stores how to prevent shoplift and how to prevent armed gangs from coming in and how to prevent these smash and grab type people coming in. And the guy had a lot of really good tips, and he told some really interesting stories during the training, which I still remember. And one of the things that he would say in the retail environment is if you go into a clothing store and you look at a round rack of, say, jackets or something like that, or shirts or dresses or whatever, and they're hanging on hangers, I mean, these crooks come in groups of about 10 or 15 people. They grab armloads of clothing off of these racks, and they run out of the building. They throw them into their cars, and they drive off. Sometimes the security people chase them. Sometimes they get shot at. Sometimes they get away because the security people are not allowed to chase them. But they can steal, tons and tons of thousands of dollars of clothing in a really short period of time. And so his answer to some of those types of shoplifting type behaviors was to reverse the hooks on the hangers. So clothing hangers, you can spin the top of it, the little hook. And so some would go this way and some would go this way. And so every couple of clothings, he would switch them around. So you couldn't grab a whole armful and pull them off. They would be stuck on there. I mean, it's just that small of a thing to do if you're working in a retail environment, you sell clothing. And also that you put the really expensive stuff, like the leather jackets and the really expensive coats, under a cable lock and key system. And, you take them off if somebody wants to try it on, but that keeps them from running out of the store with, five $1,000 leather jackets. So there's lots of things that, bad guys think about that you and I perhaps don't think about. If you wanted to steal a car, for example, would there's lots of ways to look at it. Could you sneak into somebody's garage in the middle of the night? You'd have to break into their garage, and maybe their car is locked, and you'd have to figure out a way to get into the car with maybe a Slim Jim. And if their car was locked inside the garage, which I do in mine, I lock my car inside my own garage because my garage is not attached to the house, and I can't hear always what's going on in my garage. My cats are sleeping in there, but they're not going to stop a thief. And in that situation, there's a lot of work to do to steal a car. You'd have to break into the garage, break into the car, figure out how to hotwire the car or use a master key or whatever they do, a universal electronic key, and then steal the car. Or you could just hang around the post office, or you could hang around the Starbucks, or you could hang around a convenience store, or you could hang around a gas station and wait for that person. And this is your time of stealing the car is about 7 o'clock, maybe between 7 and 8 o'clock in the morning, where people come in their construction trucks or their expensive sedans or their minivans, sometimes with their kids in the back. And let's say a guy pulls up in his $52,000 pickup truck full of tools, and he does what a lot of people do at the convenience store at the Starbucks. They're only going in there for a minute, so they leave the keys in the ignition and they leave the engine running. And they just pop in to get their cup of coffee like they always do every morning. And you could, if you're a good crook, you could figure this out at the most popular convenience store, the most popular gas stations, the most popular coffee shops, Starbucks, that are in the neighborhood, and you just hang around. And you wear nice clothing, and you look nondescript. You don't dress like you're homeless, and you don't wear anything that's super flashy, blaze orange or blaze yellow, but you just dress like everybody else does. Maybe you have a cup of coffee in your hand, and you're standing around outside the front of the business. The guy parks his car, he leaves the keys in it, he goes inside to get his cup of coffee, you steal his car. No necessary hot wiring involved, no master keys, no Slim Jims, no breaking the steering wheel, no cutting, what are those things called off of there, the locks that we used to put on steering wheels all the time, no cutting those off of there. You just drive off with the car that the guy has conveniently left the keys in it for you. You have all his tools in the back that you can sell or hawk. You can have whatever he left in the car, as well as expensive sunglasses or maybe even his cell phone. That's what people do when they go inside. They just run inside to get a cup of coffee. So if I was a bad guy, I would dress in a really nondescript sort of way, hang around the post office. They do that there. Hang around the coffee shop, hang around the convenience store, hang around the Starbucks where people go inside just for a minute. And so that was only gone for a second is what they tell the cops and their insurance company later on. Which goes back to the idea that, you know, no matter how short of time you believe that you're going to be in a public place, I'm not talking about your driveway, that's pretty unlikely unless you're on a busy street, but how unlikely it's going to be for you to have your car stolen, okay, 99 times out of 100, maybe you can get away with leaving your keys in the ignition and then you can go inside. But the other time that your $50,000 truck with all your tools disappears is an embarrassing conversation to have with your friends, your family, and your insurance company as to why you left the keys in the car in the first place. So that's one way. One of my friends when I lived in Colorado Springs, was a delivery driver. My workout partner at the gym out there was a UPS driver. And he had the UPS brown shirt and the UPS brown shorts. And he had the UPS little brown socks with the gold trim. And he had the UPS hat. And he was a relief driver. And so he would work all the parts of town in Colorado Springs when the usual driver was on vacation or out sick. So he didn't have a regular route. He just went where they sent him. So every morning he would get a new assignment to go to a different part of town, a different route to drive. And he would show up in his brown UPS truck and he would jump out with his hand truck and he would load his packages on the back and go inside of an office building or some kind of public building, government building, whatever it was, and make his deliveries or go to an office building, government building, retail building, go into an office complex and pick up things. And so I always said to him, does anybody ever ask you, hey, where's the normal guy? Where's the regular guy? Where's the regular woman that usually has this route? And he said, nope, never. And I said, does anybody ever ask you your name or to show ID that you actually work at UPS? And he said, no, never. Why would they? And then I said, well, because I can buy, and I did it, and I proved it to him. And I used this as a training discussion in my workplace violence classes about how we need to pay attention to people who wear uniforms that we think are legit and may not be. I can buy, and have done it, bought a uniform, shorts, shirt, hat, little socks, of a UPS driver at a thrift store. Now, I don't know why they bought that at a thrift store, and I don't know why you'd sell a UPS uniform, but I could. So I could, and it'd be better if I had the legs for it. I don't anymore, but if I had strong, muscular legs like in the old days, I would put on my UPS shorts and my UPS shirt and my little socks, and I would push a hand truck into a business, and I would go into the back and say, hi. And I would go into, you know, I would have figured out which business I want to go into and steal stuff. And I would go in and take some laptops and put them into an empty box, which I'm pushing, or some tablets or some expensive equipment or purses or backpacks or whatever I think I could get from people in the work area that they're not paying attention to because they don't think I'm anything other than the normal UPS guy. So people in our society look at somebody wearing some type of uniform and go, that person must be legit. A bad guy wouldn't dress up in blue construction work shirt or blue work pants and have his name on his shirt, you know, Larry, and he wouldn't come into my business and steal anything, would he? And of course they would. So there's a small number of crooks who are really, really good at that kind of social engineering, which is I will dress like what people anticipate me to be. I may dress like a gardener. I may dress like a delivery guy. I may dress like a maintenance guy. And as a result, I can carry a toolbox, which is empty, into a business of some type and go around and take cell phones off people's desks or take purses out of women's desk drawers where they sometimes put them, the file cabinet desk drawer or the desk drawer next to them, they put their purse or their backpack, if it's a guy maybe, or a briefcase. I'll take tablets, cell phones, laptops, I'll take cash, I'll take anything that I can get, jewelry that people leave laying around, all kinds of stuff, because I'll be in the back and people don't anticipate that I'm a bad guy because I'm wearing a uniform. So think about how, you know, we look at somebody wearing khaki uniform, wearing a blue uniform, carrying a toolbox or something like that going into some business. And then here's the key. It's the clipboard. That's the thing that you bring along with you if you're a bad guy. You don't need a gun. You need a clipboard. Because people walk around with a clipboard, they look important and official. It has some papers on it, it has a pen attached to it, and you wave around this clipboard. So the guy that did the training for us when I worked at the clothing store, he specialized as a crook, and he went to prison several times and you know, did long stints in prison for theft, and he stole really high-end stuff, jewelry and construction equipment and cars, and he just wasn't an average thief, he was a high-end thief. And he would go to a construction site wearing a suit, or at least a shirt and a tie and dress slacks, and he would have like an orange vest on, and he would be carrying a clipboard, and he'd be wearing a hard hat, and he'd go to this construction site at the end of the day. Let's say, you know, construction guys get off at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. He would show up just before that, and he would say, I'm here from the leasing company. And his partner would be driving a huge truck, a flatbed truck, and he would say, with ramps, and he would say, I'm here from the leasing company. We're here to swap out these backloaders, skip loaders, bulldozers, whatever it happens to be, and we're going to bring in, you know, fresh equipment for you guys for the job site tomorrow. And so these guys in the construction site, and this would be a big construction site, and they would stand around while he and his partner would drive one or two really expensive, you know, $250,000, $500,000 construction equipment, backloaders, bulldozers, backhoes, whatever you call them, up onto a ramp, up onto a flatbed truck, and then drive off. And then about an hour later, they think, you know, that seems a little funny. I didn't think we had a leasing company. And they'd be long gone. They'd have driven these things to another part of town where they would load them into a truck that was covered, and no one would be the wiser. So he would show up wearing a shirt and a tie, wearing a vest, you know, an orange construction vest, one of those fluorescent vests, and carrying a clipboard. And he was a older guy. He had a kind of a salt and pepper mustache and gray hair. And he looked like a guy that worked for a leasing company for construction equipment. And they would believe him, and he and his partner would drive off with millions of dollars week after week with construction equipment all around the country. And they would sell this stuff, and, you know, probably overseas, and it would get shipped, and all kinds of stuff would happen. But he was really good at convincing people that he was from the leasing company. He was a crook, and he carried a clipboard. That was, he said, I didn't need a gun. I had a clipboard. When you think about being confronted sometimes, if I was a bad guy and I was confronted by somebody, I was wearing a work shirt or work clothing, I would just say, no hablo inglés, and lo siento, pero no hablo inglés, and act like I spoke no English and just Spanish. Or choose another language which you had a few words of that you could say to somebody, which they would say, well, I can't communicate with this person, so I'll just let it go. I remember when I worked in the cops in San Diego, and this is laziness on my part, I admit, and also because I didn't know what I was doing when I was a baby cop, I would stop people in the south part of San Diego. I worked in San Ysidro, which is the last San Diego city before you cross into Mexico. And I would pull people over that were from Tijuana, and they would have what are called front BC plates or front Baja California, upper Baja California plates. And I would pull them over, and I spoke okay Spanish, not great, but okay. And they would hand me a clot of papers 2 inches thick with international driver's license and Mexican passport and Mexican registration, and I couldn't read or understand much of it, and I would go, okay, hand it back, have a nice day. So they could have been a bad guy, and I just said, here's your paperwork back, and on we go, because I didn't understand what was going on. People do this in social situations and in life situations all the time. So khaki clothing, UPS driver uniforms, blue clothing, clipboard, hand truck, you can get into a lot of businesses in the United States, even government businesses, just by looking like you belong. Think about all you need to carry into these places is some empty boxes, and you could load up a bunch of stuff that's portable and expensive and theft-worthy that no one would even recognize. If I was a bad guy, I would cut my hair into a business guy's, you know, hairstyle. I would look, you know, like a business person. I have an expensive suit. I have my hair would be a little bit gray. I'd carry a big briefcase, big enough to steal people's purses, wallets, backpacks, you know, things that I can stuff into laptops, things like that. I'd pretend to be a vendor or a salesperson or the executive just in from the Dallas office who needs to get behind the scenes. And so lots of times people in security positions will get bamboozled or kind of intimidated by somebody who says, don't you know who I am? I'm Mr. Johnson from the Dallas office, and I need to get back and see the head of marketing here. And I'm not signing your forms. I've got an appointment. And they'll sort of brush by the security person who says, well, my mission has been given to me is observe and report, not stop people from getting behind the scenes. My mission has been to have people sign the visitor's log, and they didn't tell me what to do if no one signs the visitor's log and just pushes on past. So sometimes certain crooks have good social engineering skills. Well, they'll act like a jerk, or they'll act all important or officious or obnoxious, and they'll kind of intimidate the security person, and they just blow right past them and get into the building that way. When I think about the model for how I would break into houses, sometimes, you know, you see movies where people are wearing, you know, black clothing, One of my favorite old shows I watch at nighttime on MeTV is Hogan's Heroes, and it's a show from the 60s where these guys are in a prison of war camp. They're Americans. Every time they sneak out from the camp, they're always wearing black shoe polish on their face and black clothing. Well, lots of studies suggest that the best way to camouflage yourself from being seen at nighttime is wear dark green. And so black clothing, sort of a cliche, you know, black outfits, black shoes, and everything like that, may be more visible in certain low light situations. So dark green, that's what I would be wearing. I'd have, you know, all green clothing, dark green clothing, blend in much better in nighttime environments, harder for the cops to see me, et cetera. So let's talk about stealing a car. Let's say that I'm a BMW fan and I've owned two BMWs. I love those cars. I'd like to go steal a BMW. Okay, I'll go to the airport. And the airport is where people leave their cars for at least a day. Right, I've gone to the airport at the crack of dawn and got home late at night and driven back home. Or usually I've left my car there for, you know, about a week to 10 days, depending. Let's say I want to steal a BMW at the airport. I go to a relatively crowded part of the airport and I start driving around in the car that I'm going to ditch, which is also a stolen car. Or I walk onto the airport property, and that's just as easy to do in some airport parking garages. Imagine going to Los Angeles International Airport or another huge city airport where there's just row after row of cars parked in these huge concrete structures, where I have a screwdriver and I pop off the license plates of a BMW that I want to steal, and I find another BMW, and you have to look around for a while, but there probably is one in the same parking complex, and I just swap the plates. So the stolen plates for the car that I'm going to steal are now on a car that I've not stolen. See what I mean? So I've taken the plates off the car that I want to steal and put them on a car that I'm not going to steal, and took the fresh plates off the car I'm not going to steal and put it on the car I am going to steal. So I steal the BMW and it has fresh plates on it. So the person who comes out and reports their car is stolen is going to give the cops the plates for the car that they think is on there, and oftentimes they don't look, and oftentimes the cops, you know, would never think about sometimes somebody switched the plates. And so they'll give them the license plates for a car that's parked two lanes over or you know, two floors away. So now you say to yourself, okay, well, how do I get out of the parking garage? I don't have a parking ticket, and maybe the person took it with them. Okay, what's the fee in most parking garages, especially at the airport, if you don't have a parking ticket? You've lost your parking ticket. It's usually a full day. So maybe I have to pay $65 or $75 or even $100 to steal a 2020 BMW, which is worth $85,000. I'll pay $65 to steal an $85,000 car. Or I'll look around the inside of the car, which most people handily leave the parking ticket, which I never do. I always take it with me just to make it harder on a crook if he wants to steal my car. They leave it in the center console, or they leave it up in the sun visors. And so I'll pull that off and pay for the time that I was, quote, in the car, had the car in the parking garage, and drive off with it. So swapping the plates buys me a lot of time, and maybe I have to do that more than once. Now the key there is to swap plates for a car that's pretty similar, so it has to be in BMW, and you want to make sure that you swap plates for a registration that's already been paid. If you drive around a car that has expired tags as a crook, maybe you get pulled over by the cops, and then they figure out it's not your car and you get arrested. But think about how easy it is to swap plates for similar cars. I mean, the most commonly stolen car in the United States is a Honda Civics or a Honda Accords. Most commonly stolen cars tend to be Ford F-150s and also Toyota Camrys. I mean, there's a million of those cars around. Swap the plates. So swap the front and the back plates and put a fresh set of plates on there, and you could drive around for a good chunk of time before anybody realized what was going on, because the plates don't match the VIN number, but it's hard to figure that out, you know, and the cops aren't going to figure it out unless they start looking at the paperwork and the VINs. So the other thing I realized from people, and that's why I carry my registration in my wallet instead of in my glove compartment of my car, it's safer that way, is when someone steals a car and your registration is in the glove compartment, it's really hard sometimes to be able to tell the cops anything about the car. You don't know what the VIN is, and you don't. Sometimes people under stress don't even remember what their license plates are. So I always carry my registration in my wallet, not in the glove compartment of my car. One of the things that police cars have is a brake kill switch, which means they can drive through an alley and shut the headlights off and at nighttime and shut the rear brakes off so when they step on the brakes, it doesn't illuminate in red, and they can sneak around in alleys and other places like that. That's pretty easy to install on a car. So if I was a crook, especially at nighttime, and I did a lot of snooping and pooping through alleys and things like that, I'd install a kill switch on my car so that I could sneak around and my headlights would be off and I'd be blacked out in the front and blacked out in the back. This would be handy for me, especially also if I got into a police pursuit. Think about how people steal things from a retail environment. They stuff things down their pants. They use things called a booster box. They use, you know, they have women that have fake pregnancy stomachs where they stuff a bunch of things in there. They put things into, you know, bags and carry stuff out. That usually leads to some sort of, you know, somebody paying attention from store security or undercover store, you know, security person that's trained in shoplift to pay attention to that stuff. Or you could steal what you're going to steal and then go up into the cash register and pay for a number of items. So if I'm stealing, you know, watches or jewelry or cologne or razors or baby formula or anything else that's pretty expensive to be stolen out, especially out of like a grocery store, I'd buy, you know, a six pack of soda or a case of some cookies and a quart of milk and pay for it and leave. And no one thinks that a shoplifter is going to buy any kind of products. They always think they're just going to steal stuff and then try to sneak out of the store. Well, leaving the store without buying anything is usually something that draws attention to security people or sometimes the staff if they're paying any kind of attention. So if I was a good crook, I would steal a bunch of stuff and pay for a small amount of things as I left the store. Okay, so let's do the old credit card switcheroo. This is genius, and I don't know how to beat this. If you're somebody who is leaving your wallet or your purse around where it shouldn't be, that's probably how to beat this, but this is genius. Okay, we'll follow the logic here. Let's say I want to go to the local high school and run laps around the track, or I want to go to the park with my dog and I want to run my dog around and I don't want to carry my purse or I don't want to carry my wallet or you know, I'm wearing running clothes and I don't have any place to put my wallet. So I'll leave my wallet or my purse, if I was a young lady, in the car. Maybe I hide it under the seat like that people do, or I put it in the glove compartment, or I cover it with a blanket in the back. Let's say I leave my wallet stuffed under the driver's seat or the passenger seat, or I've got it in the glove compartment. So I take my dog, or I go running laps around the high school track, and I can't see my car. And somebody comes in and uses a Slim Jim or some other means to get into my car. They search my car quickly, and they look in the usual hiding places, you know, the glove compartment, the center console, places like that, and they find my wallet. They take out my gold American Express card and they substitute another gold American Express card in there. They take out my MasterCard, which looks black and orange and red like other MasterCards do, and they substitute another one. So they have many credit cards that they can swap in, and they take my good credit card and they substitute in a stolen one or one that they've already used, which is dead. So imagine the genius here. I have two American Express cards. I have a platinum one and a gold one. And so somebody comes in and they have a bunch of platinum and gold ones because that's what MasterCard or American Express cards look like. And they put in stolen or dead credit cards and they take mine out. Okay, they put my wallet back exactly where it was in my car. They lock my car and they leave. I come back from running or with my dog and I load my dog back in the car and I drive home. And for days or weeks, I go around with the fact that my credit card has been stolen and I have no knowledge of it. Now, I use my American Express cards for my travel, and I haven't traveled outside of Springfield since February. If my credit card had sat in my wallet, and I look occasionally just to reminisce about the old days and traveling. If I had looked at my credit card 6 months later, I would have realized it's not my credit card. It's not my American Express card. Someone stole both of those and substituted in other ones, and my card has been... Now, obviously, I would figure it out once I got the bill. So this guy would have 30 days head start on me. But as long as he was careful and not making a bunch of purchases like, you know, buying a speedboat for $50,000 with my credit card, he could do a lot of damage before I realized my credit card was stolen. So think of the genius about this. The guy breaks into the car. He does not take my wallet because I would report that, and I report all my credit cards stolen and my driver's license, things like that. He just swaps out a couple that he has a bunch of same color card and puts them in there, and then he puts it back in the exact same spot. I'm none the wiser for at least 30 days. It is genius. Back to stealing cars. Think about the places where people go to leave their car for a substantial amount of time. Christmas time at the mall. On holidays and weekends and things, movie theater parking lots. You know this person's going to be in there for at least 2 hours. How about high school parking lots where these kids are driving nice cars that their parents have bought for them? We know they're going to be in there for 6 hours. Think about all the places that a car would sit for a substantial amount of time, like a park and ride. So when we lived in California, there were lots of park and rides where people would carpool with each other and they'd park a car there from 7 in the morning until 6 o'clock at night. So you know that car's not going to be missed or seen for 6 or 7 or even 10 hours. So let's talk about being a good burglar. Most burglars are pretty crude. They break windows. In a commercial vehicle, commercial retail theft, they would attach a chain or a cable to the back of their truck bumper or their car bumper or a hitch, and they would attach it to the doors of the business and yank them off and go inside. Burglar alarms don't stop these guys because all they do is work faster. And so I've talked about this in other shows, which is a burglar alarm is a useful deterrent, but it's not a perfect one because a ringing alarm, the guy just says, well, the cops, it's going to take them at least 10 minutes to get here. I'm just going to work faster. So actually a silent alarm is probably more effective because the guy doesn't know that it's went off. So if I was going to break into a retail establishment, I would go through the roof. I've been on lots of roofs of commercial buildings, and almost all of them have some sort of fiberglass or plastic hatch which leads down into the roof. Now, you got to figure out how to get down from the roof into the rest of the building, but I would have cased it out by going inside there and saying, okay, where this plastic hatch is in this roof, there's a ladder that's attached to the side of the inside of the building, or there's a, you know, this is a roof access room or something like that. That's how I would get into the building. So I wouldn't have to break glass, which cops might hear. I wouldn't have to break glass, which would set off an alarm. Lots of times I've never seen it. Lots of times these hatches are made of fiberglass and old plastic, which are brittle and can be broken easily and are not alarmed. So that's the easiest way to get into the building. And if you can come down the stairs that they've conveniently left for you, or the ladder that they've conveniently left for you, you can get inside the building. So the usual response by the cops in a burglar alarm, especially on a cold night, a windy night, a rainy night, is to show up and check the perimeter doors and to see if they're unlocked. And if they are unlocked, then they get a canine and they search the building. Or two cops with guns and flashlights search the building. If I broke into a business where I thought maybe I set off the alarm, I would just wait inside with the doors locked. I would make sure all the doors were locked. The cops would show up, and I've seen this a million times because I've done it a million times. It's not great officer safety, but they get out of the car. They wander around the building. They check all the exterior doors, make sure they're locked. They check all the exterior windows to make sure they're not broken, and they get in their car and they drive off. Now, the reason I would do this on a windy night or a rainy night is sometimes burglar alarms get set off by the motion of the weather. And so sometimes what the cops say is, that's a repeat. And if I set it off, you know, the alarm off again, the chances of them coming back to check the building one more time are pretty rare. So even if I set it off once, I just hide out inside a locked building. They come by and check the perimeter. They leave. I set it off again. This is the time that I do my stealing, and I get out before they come back the second time, if they come back at all. So I'm a home burglar, and I think about all the things that people conveniently leave for me outside of their houses to be a good home burglar. And this includes ladders, and this includes tools like axes and shovels and hammers and nicely stacked lawn furniture and things that I can stack up to get on the roof, things that I can stack up to get to the next level of the house, ladders that they leave. And I could do this in broad daylight if I was wearing, and here we go back to what I talked about before, painter's clothing. So imagine I'm wearing a painter's hat and white painter's overalls, and I have a van that looks like a painter's type of a van or a truck with, you know, painter stuff in it. I could wander around the outside of that house. No one would say anything at all. They would think in broad daylight that your house was being painted. All I'd have to do is steal what I never need to steal and then drive off again. People say, well, I thought you were having your house painted. That's why I didn't do anything. I didn't call the cops. So most home burglars get caught with the stuff in their possession, in their backpack, or sometimes their pockets, or whatever they can carry away as they run away. Or they have it in their cars. And so if the cops pull up and the chase is on, and they pull this guy over, they find, you know, your guns, your jewelry, your coin collection, your laptops, your tablets, whatever in the back of this person's car. What I would do, if I stole stuff from you, I would take the loot and walk someplace around the neighborhood and store it. I'd stash it. So I'd put it in some kind of, not necessarily dig a hole in the ground, but I'd find a place to store it. I'd be, you know, inside of a trashy looking box next to a tree or something like that that people would think was garbage. I would leave my stuff there. I would also not park my car, as if I'm a burglar, not park my car in front of the house that I was stealing stuff from. I'd park my car maybe a half mile away. And if I ever got stopped by the cops, I'd say that, you know, my car broke down and I'm, you know, trying to find a gas station, or my cell phone doesn't work, or that type of thing. And so I would go back the next day and recover my loot, what I stole, instead of driving off that particular day with the stuff. So even if the cops stopped me and talked to me, and even if they went back to my car, which is probably, you know, going to be stolen, or maybe it's a half mile away and they don't go back there, they're not going to find the loot from the burglary in my car. I've already hit it. Okay. So think about police shifts. In some communities, the cops work 8 to 4, 4 to midnight, and midnight to 8. And in some communities, cops work overlap shifts. So in my PD, we worked 2 to midnight, and then graveyard officers worked 9 to 6 or 8 to 6. And first watch officers worked 6 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. So there was some overlap. And so the time to schedule your robberies, if you're going to do convenience store robberies or liquor store robberies or bank robberies or things like that, is around police shift change. Now, obviously, banks aren't open at 6 o'clock in the morning, but there's a shift change for convenience stores robberies or liquor store robberies, where you could catch the time between when the cops are coming off duty and when the cops are going on duty, where there's not a lot of cops in the field. So if I was a burglar or a convenience store robber, I would choose that time between about 5:30 in the morning and 6 o'clock in the morning if I knew the cops were working a first watch schedule where they started at 6 in the morning. Because there's a bunch of cops at the station getting ready to go to line up at 6 in the morning, and there's a bunch of cops, not a bunch, but several, sitting in their cars, freezing to death, drinking coffee, trying to stay awake for the last half hour or hour of graveyard. So that's when I would do it, because a lot of those cops, and I'll have to admit I did this too, is they sneak back to the perimeters of the station, and they'll be a couple of blocks away from the station. They just sort of hang out in the shadows before it's time to go back to the station. The other thing, which would be easy to do from the shift change perspective, is also pay attention to, and cops do this as a habit, pay attention to when cops go to convenience stores to get coffee. And they can sit in the convenience store parking lot, you know, shooting the breeze with citizens or with each other or whoever the convenience store employs for an hour, right? And so they go to the same convenience stores, and they go to the same coffee shops, the same places to get, you know, food and coffee and sodas and things like that, and use the bathroom. As soon as they leave, give it about 20 minutes, as soon as this cop has pulled away, and then rob the store. So watch from a distance. As soon as this cop's pulled away, because he's not or she's not coming back to that place, they're gonna drive around and patrol for several more hours, and before they come back to use the bathroom or get another cup of coffee. So wait about 20 minutes after they've left, and then rob the store. So police shift change is one. When these cops have driven away, again, whether it's a restaurant or a coffee shop or something like that, there's about a 20-minute span of time where they're going to be probably the farthest away from where the business was that I robbed. And also, from that standpoint, the store employees are kind of let their guard down in terms of, so, well, the cops have just left the building. There's no way I'm going to get robbed now. The cops were just here 10 minutes ago. The cops were just here 15 minutes ago, and they tend not to be as vigilant as they should be. The fact that, at nighttime, there's more likelihood of robberies, when they're not going to pay attention because the cops were just here. Back to my BMW story. When I had had my two BMWs, my midlife crisis cars. There were times where I would go to a mailbox in my community, and there was always somebody sitting on the bus bench next to the mailbox. And sometimes it was just a person catching the bus, and sometimes it was a homeless guy sleeping on the bus bench, but sometimes there was somebody sitting on the bus bench. So I would pull up to the mailbox to get out of my expensive car, my expensive midlife crisis car, to put my mail into the mailbox and then get back into my car and drive off. Well, the bus bench was 10 feet away. So I would get out of my car and take my keys with me and walk the 4 feet or 5 feet from my car to the mailbox and then back again. And then I'd put the key back in and start my car and drive off. And people go, well, you sure are paranoid, Steve. It's not about paranoia. Imagine how stupid I would feel having to tell my insurance company and my family that I got out of my car and walked past somebody who was sleeping on the bus bench, who went over and got into my expensive car and drove off with it. So just like the guy that runs inside to get a cup of coffee, there's also lots of times where people are distracted by things like at the mailbox or going inside to get their mail at the post office where they leave their keys in it. So I'm not going to leave my keys in my car ever. And I'm not going to have to explain to people how that happened, where somebody got into my car because I conveniently left my stuff in my keys in the car. So think about how people get robbed outside of ATMs, and they have so little awareness about what's going on around them. And so even during daylight hours, people say, well, I'm gonna walk up, or I'll drive up and get my money, and it'll be safe. Or there's a camera inside the ATM, this will protect me. So think of all the things where people come outside of a pawn shop. They come out of a check cashing store. They come out of a Western Union office. They come out of a money exchange office in cities close to the border. These are called casas de cambios, or money exchanges. Or they come away from a place, an ATM, where or even a casino. Think about people and think about how bad guys watch inside a casino, what people pay attention to or not pay attention to, and that's where they get robbed, outside the ATM, outside the liquor store that has a check cashing place, outside a pawn shop where they've just sold something, outside a Western Union office where they just got some money. So people are distracted by their need for whatever got them their money, or you know, whether it was casino wins or ATM machines, and they don't pay attention to being robbed just outside those places. So you have to pay really careful attention to where you get your money. And when you get your money, you have to pay really careful attention who is around those places when you're trying to leave. And if it's a safe way to do it, then you got to get out of there. So think of all the reasons why crooks are able to be successful. And as the cops say, we only catch the dumb ones. Because of good social engineering, or the clipboard, or the uniform that they wear, or being in the right place at the right time, and waiting for people to do dumb things based on convenience, which is like leaving their keys in their car or leaving a ladder next to their house when they leave. And so all the things to be a good crook, these aren't the stupid ones, these are the smart ones that we oftentimes have a really hard time catching. So that was my idea for an article so many years ago called If I Were a Crook. So now time for Crime Time's Stupidest Crook of the Week. This is sort of a grisly one here. It's my favorite part of the show, Crime Time's Stupidest Crook of the Week, where we get to talk about some of our dumbest criminals who managed to get themselves arrested based on their monumental stupidity. Okay, this is kind of grisly, but this is also a good example of karmic justice in the world. November 17, 2020, a man punched his girlfriend in Miami Shores, Florida, ran from the cops when he was spotted and was hit and killed by a train. Bummer. Man was hit by a train and killed after running from the scene of a domestic violence incident in Miami Shores, Florida. According to Miami-Dade police, the 23-year-old man and his girlfriend were at a store on Biscayne Boulevard when he punched her. Multiple witnesses called 911 after seeing the assault. Officers arrived shortly after 6 in the morning to find injuries on the woman's face. Police say they tried to talk to the man, but he ran away and he did not realize a southbound train was coming and he was struck. Here's the gross part. The impact was so violent, it dismembered his body. I looked at the photograph. There was two yellow sheets covering the two parts of him. It's unknown whether the train was a passenger train or a freight train, because it kept going, the police say. I don't know why that was relevant, but they put it in the story. Man's name has not been released, as his family is being notified of his death. Yellow crime scene tape blocked the area for the train tracks for several hours as police carried out their investigations. Punched his girlfriend, ran from the cops, got hit by a train, and killed. Bummer. Crime Time IQ test. Let's test your Crime Time IQ with this week's crime quiz question. Okay, this is an interesting one. What country, not city, and it's not the United States, what country has the biggest police department in the world? It's not the U.S. The NYPD has 35,000 officers, 38, depending on what you look at. What country has the biggest police department in the world? It's not the NYPD. Okay, Tokyo has the world's biggest metropolitan police force at 43,000 police officers. Tokyo, Japan has the biggest metropolitan police force in the world, 43,000 cops and 3,000 part-time cops. So they have 46,000 cops, way bigger than any city in the United States has police. Interesting, eh? A crime time safety tip. This week's crime time safety tip is an oldie but a goodie and one worth remembering. When you throw out your trash after opening up all your Christmas presents, make sure that you cut up or burn, like we do here in Missouri, the big boxes that hold all your, held all your cool, expensive presents. It's not a good idea to put trash out on the sidewalk that has your empty boxes that just told a potential burglar that you got a really cool PlayStation or a new Mac or a new big screen TV or another expensive gizmo. In other words, don't advertise stuff in front of your house. So shred up your boxes, cut them up, put them into bags, stuff like that, so that when the trash guys come to pick up everything, there's no visible signs of what is what Christmas things that Santa brought you, and you don't give that tip off to people driving by, because they got drive by and they go, well, a lot of cool boxes, a lot of really expensive electronic stuff here, and I'm sure these people are going to go back to work in the next couple of days, so Christmas is Friday. I'll wait till Monday when they all go back to work, and then I'll break into the house and steal all this expensive stuff. So don't advertise what you have received as Christmas presents. So next week on Crime Time, I will do kind of a year-end wrap-up. I'll talk about all of the guests that I've had on the show, and I'll give a plug to each one and remind folks of their websites if you want to get a hold of any of those people and see what they're doing. Some of my guests have wrote really cool books, and some of the folks do interesting things, so we'll talk about who those people are. I'll also talk about a book that I've written, which is just sort of sitting out there in the Kindle ethos. It's called Stay Safe at Work. It's a workplace security book, and I like it. It's done. It was really a fun project to work on, but it's not the right time for this book because people are not back in their offices. So we'll talk about what that book will look like in terms of the various subjects, like things like domestic violence at work and preventing robberies where you work and parking lot issues and dealing with homeless people in the parking lots and dealing with drug and alcohol users and active shooters and things like that. I'll talk about the contents of that book when I come back in next week to do the last show of the year. So thanks for listening to this episode of Crime Time. I encourage you to go to my website at crimetimeradio.com. Send me an email with questions or topics you want me to cover on future shows and connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm at Dr. Steve Albrecht on LinkedIn. Follow me on Twitter at Dr. Steve Albrecht. And so next week we'll be talking about my Stay Safe at Work book. And we will be doing our last show of the year. And we will be talking a little bit about the guests that we have. We'll be starting at our new time, which is 0900 Central Time. In our world, there are sheep and shepherds and wolves. Too many people are sheep and too few people are shepherds. There are lots of wolves out there. There are not enough police officers or sheriff's deputies to protect us all. You need to be a shepherd. Take care of yourself and protect your family and your loved ones and your friends and your coworkers, and pay attention and be prepared to defend yourself with legal force if necessary. Be a good witness for the police if you see a crime. Stay safe and aware and alert at home, at school, at work, and even on the road. Thanks for listening to Crime Time. My thanks to Jim Wining, producer Matt, producer Jay, and all the good folks at Axe Media Group. I'm Steve Albrecht, and thanks for listening to what I know is right.